So the book of Genesis from chapter 12 onward is a study of a family that is slowly becoming a tribe that will eventually become a race and then a nation of people. And it's the family of Abraham. And recently our focus has been on Jacob and Joseph. And you have this intertwined story of narrative of Jacob and Joseph and what happened in their lives. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then Joseph, the one of 12 sons of Jacob, becomes the feature. You may recall, you may have it in your belongings. If not, it's okay. I gave you a sheet at the beginning of the study in January that outlined the dates and what we would cover. And on the back of it, I had a set of diagrams that I thought would help you in organizing and thinking about the material in the book of Genesis. And this is one of the diagrams that I had. And that is, the book of Genesis has this pattern of chaos to order, order to chaos. For instance, order to chaos. The world is created and orderly, and then sin comes in and evil flourishes and creates chaos. And the flooded world was chaos, but then the world was ordered after that. This includes Jacob's life and Joseph's life. It's not long into the narrative about Jacob, although in years he's about 40 years of age, that chaos ensues. And the chaos ensues because of his own connivings in his family, and he has to flee and goes to Haran. And even in Haran, his life is fairly chaotic. What's happening regarding Laban and how Laban is working him over regarding the family and the service that he's rendering him. And so Jacob has this pattern of going from chaos to order. And today we see how that things become very much in place. That Jacob, we saw last week, learned that Joseph was still alive in Egypt, and he's the second to Pharaoh. And so chapter 46 is how Jacob then travels down to Egypt and reunites with his son. And there is this completion. There is this unity now that is created in Jacob's family. Same thing with Joseph's life. Think about how from early days there's chaos, sold into Egypt, trouble down in Egypt, thrown in prison, all those kinds of things. And then it goes from chaos to order. Now, I want you to think with me about what happens, and they're connected, Jacob and Joseph's life, because the order that they both experience, especially in the family, are happening at the same time. Joseph is reunited with his brothers. Things get resolved and made right. And Jacob is restored with his son, as we'll see here in chapter 46. And I want you to think about what created that. What led in Jacob and Joseph's life, things going from chaos to order? Now, the answer every time in a Bible class to any question, especially one early in the morning, if you think for you on Sunday, I guess it's early in the morning, is God. Okay, there's a safe answer, God. And it is God doing this. It's God creating order out of the chaos of both Jacob and Joseph's life. But what else is at work? Why do things get made right with Jacob's family?
God's will.
Right? God's will and God's plan. But there is this simultaneous, these two-track things that you see in the Bible. God is carrying out his plan, but then there are human choices. What are the choices that people are making here in the last couple of few chapters we've been studying? Though Joseph is testing his brothers, he's also at the same time doing what? Caring for them, providing for them, right? And their brothers conduct themselves how? In all the episodes with Joseph until he reveals himself, how do the brothers conduct themselves? Humility. Cooperation. They respect Joseph, though they don't know who he is. Are they honest? Yeah. They tell him the truth. Are there any tricks they try to pull? Nope. And so what you see here is that order is created when you see the character maturity of the people involved, and that going hand in hand with their faith in God. Because the same faith that led Joseph to say, God sent me ahead of you. You meant it for evil, God meant it for good kind of statement that he makes in so many words in 45, and then he says it in chapter 50. It's Joseph's faith that is driving how he's handling the situation, but those brothers, as soon as trouble starts, what do they experience? What emotion are they grappling with while Joseph is testing them? Guilt. And they connect that guilt to God is surely paying us back. You see, even when you realize that you're guilty before God, that awareness is because you believe in God. And you believe in His role as ruler of the universe. And so you see an awareness of God in a resolution to the rule of God in both Joseph and his brothers that leads to this order. So that's what's been happening. And in a way, the climatic event is chapter 45 when he reveals himself. It's one of the most emotionally packed narratives in all of the Bible, I would have you see. And what happens after 45 is like a good long movie. The climax happens, but then there's another 15 minutes worth of scenes. It's like Lord of the Rings or Passage to India, some of those real long movies, you know, Lawrence of Arabia. You know, the climax is, and then there's 20 more minutes of the movie left. Well, it's because it's such a in-depth story that you've got to have this wrap-up to put everything in its place to move on to the book of Exodus. So let's look here in Genesis chapter 46 at what takes place in the events next. So after Jacob gets word that Joseph is down to eat in Egypt, Jacob needs some reassurance because Jacob's drive when he's in Haran is to finally get back to Canaan, which he does. It's the land of promise. But now he gets another message. Genesis 46. Dave, can you read for us verse 1 to 7? Genesis 46, 1 through 7 to begin with, please.
So Israel set out with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to God of his father, Isaac. God spoke to Isaac in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. He said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will surely bring you up again, and Joseph will close your eyes. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives and the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They took their livestock and their property which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and came to Egypt, Jacob and all of his descendants with him. His sons and his grandsons with him, his daughters and granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt.
All right, thank you very much. It's interesting how that entrances into Egypt and exits out of Egypt are dotted throughout the biblical narrative, and that they're pivotal points. And not just the Old Testament, but let's stick with the Old Testament. Have we seen any other journeys down to Egypt and back in the book of Genesis? Abraham, okay? And then, of course, Joseph has gone down there. And now Jacob and the rest of the family is going to go down there and back. And then, of course, the event of the Old Testament, I would have you see after the creation, is the Exodus of the Israelites from bondage that then serves as this template for redemption that will cast a shadow on the rest of the Bible and even down to us in Christ. Any other Old Testament journeys down into Egypt or exits? At the end of the Old Testament, after the Babylonians had invaded and wiped out Jerusalem And what is left is a remnant, just a, not a remnant, a small amount of people, including Jeremiah in Jerusalem. And everybody else has been either killed or hauled to Babylon. The leaders that's left go down into Egypt thinking they could have safe haven there, and they drag Jeremiah with them, and Jeremiah's protesting. It's indicated that he dies in Egypt. What about a New Testament journey into Egypt and out? Mary and Joseph and Jesus. And so you see a lot of that here. And it's got a symbolic idea too, in that sometimes you have to go down to Egypt because of circumstances, but it's always good to come out. And oftentimes the coming out is seen as a deliverance. That's sort of a pattern there. Another pattern is Jacob stopping and worshiping in verse 1. You see these patriarchs, they'll travel, they'll stop and build an altar and worship. It's another pattern. And what does God assure him of here? God comes to him and tells him what? Yep, he's going to do that. But first he wants him to go ahead and do what? Go to Egypt. See, this is Joseph's plan. But is it God's plan? And so God here is weighing in and saying, yes, this is what I want you to do. And he assures him of that. And then glance over verse 8 to 25. Matter of fact, let's drop down to verse 26 and 27. Jesse, can you read verse 26 and 27, and then we'll reflect on the rest of the chapter.
All the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2 persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70.
All right, so that 70 includes all the sons, all their family, including Joseph, his wife, and his 2 sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. So 70 in all. If you look back from verse 8 to 25, it's very specific, isn't it? What purpose does this record serve us? Why is this here? Why is it important? What does it do for us? It's showing the growth, isn't it? And it's showing that they had an understanding of who was in this family. And the Genesis writer, I think all the best evidence points to Moses, understood this. This had been, and Moses works like a lot of other biblical writers, whether and when they're writing narratives, like Luke's narrative of the Gospel of Luke and Acts, and the chronicler of the events of the United and Divided Kingdom and so forth. They're inspired men of the Holy Spirit, but they're also working with resources. And so this information of who went down and the numbers of who went down was passed on, which indicates this is very important to understanding who this family is and who was in this family. And look at the detail of this. Look at the names and so forth, that this is not a vague fairy tale kind of record. This is a solid historical account here. And then we come to this incredible emotional reunion here. Becca, will you read verse of chapter 46, just verse 28 to 30.
Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel, and presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive."
Okay. Who does Jacob send ahead of the party of 66? I mean, they've got children, grandchildren, they've got supplies, these wagons. Who goes ahead of them? Judah does. Now, if this was just by itself, we wouldn't make a lot of this, but what's the pattern we're seeing about Judah? He's emerging as what? Prominent brother, apart from Joseph, who's the prominent one, not just in this family, but in Egypt. But Judah has slipped right into this role, and appropriately so, because he's the one that gives a guarantee for Benjamin's safety, even at his own personal cost. He's the one that makes a passionate speech before the governor, whom he does not know as his brother. you know, to spare Benjamin and take him as a slave and all these kinds of things. And so you see that Judah is creeping into that role there. And then there's verse 29, which is the moment we've all been waiting for, okay? And that is when Joseph and Jacob see each other. Joseph arrives, or shall we say he pulls up in a chariot. Fact about the Bible. Poor people don't drive chariots. It's always somebody of prominence, government prominence, military leadership, that's in a chariot. And then hold your place there and go back to chapter 41, which is immediately after Pharaoh makes Joseph second in command, prime minister over the land, who's going to see to this famine crisis. And we're told in the text in Genesis 41, verse 42, Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. But yet he's not finished decking him out, because you got to look the part, right? If you're going to be the part, you got to look the part. And he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, bow the knee. Then he set him over all the land of Egypt. He's in Pharaoh's second chariot. What kind of chariot you think this is? Come on. Is this a 79 Pinto? Is this an 89 Yugo? Remember those? I looked at buying one time. Boy, that was a smart decision. Come on. What kind of chariot is this? Based on what I just read. This is a Rolls Royce. Thank you, Jesse. This is top of the line. This is the best Egypt's got. So much that when he comes through, everybody's what? Bowing the knee. Okay. They knew it was Joseph's coming. He has a presence. And before we think, well, this is really heady for Joseph, remember where Joseph started. He started in a pit. He started as a slave. He started in prison. And whose doing is it that he's riding in the second chariot? God's. God's honoring him in this way. And so, can you imagine what this scene looked like when Joseph pulled up in Goshen? And come on now, he's got a retinue. He's got a posse. We've seen it so far. When he's interacting with his brothers, he's got servants all around him doing things for his brothers and talking to him and so forth. He's got an interpreter. He's got a retinue. Anybody in this kind of position's got a group around them, okay? And Joseph pulls up. Wow, what a scene this must have been. And then what happens for, English Standard says, a good while? It just says, for a good while, what happens? In verse 29, Jacob and Joseph hugging one another and weeping on each other. For a good while. In other words, before there's any talk, they're weeping on each other and hugging each other. Because sometimes only tears can communicate what you're feeling. Words can't. And so finally, when Jacob speaks, what about his remark? What does he say in verse 30? I'm ready to die. Now let me die. Remember how earlier when he heard the news about, well, when he saw the coat dipped in blood, and he concluded through the deception of the sons that Joseph had died, he said, now I'll go down to my grave mourning. He talked in chapter 42 that if Benjamin's taken down to Egypt and something happens to him, he'll go to his grave mourning. And then in chapter 43, verse 14, when he finally gives in and lets Benjamin go with them because they're so desperate to get grain, he says, whatever befalls me, befalls me. If I have to mourn, I have to mourn. Well, now he changes his tune about his last days. Now his last days are days of peace. It's all been fixed. Everything's ordered now, and he's good with it. And so, this Jacob, you may think he's been dramatic, but this Jacob who legitimately thought his last days would be those of mourning, now they're not. They're joyful. He's not just going to get to see, and he'll make a big deal about this, we'll see this next week. He's not just going to get to see Joseph again. He's going to get to see whom? While he's in Egypt, Joseph gets married and has two sons. And this becomes a big deal with Jacob because not only have I seen you, I've seen your sons. 17. About to see that. That's a good while. So he got to know Joseph all over again and got to know his sons, didn't he? 17 years. So, 17 years with a grandchild is pretty nice. So, but things have to be squared away, right? After this incredible and emotional reunion. Zachary, will you read chapter 46, verse 31 down to 34, please?
Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh. Will say to him, my brothers and my father's house who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians.
All right, thank you. You may recall that back in chapter 45, when Pharaoh gets the news that Joseph's brothers have visited Egypt, he gives the instruction to Joseph, go get your father and your brothers, verse 18, and I will give you the best of the land. And then there's a reference to Goshen being the best of the land in chapter 47. And we'll see that in verse 6. We'll see that in a moment. But there appears to be two reasons why Jacob's family ends up in Goshen. By the way, I don't have a map, but if you're looking at Egypt, Goshen is to the east and a little bit to the northeast, east to northeast of the Nile Delta or the Nile River Valley. So it's like between the Nile River and Canaan, though, in Egypt. There appears to be two reasons. What are we told at the end of 46? Let me back up. We've already been told by what Pharaoh says and what's said later that Goshen is best of the land. And given the fact that they're shepherds and herdsmen, best of the land must indicate what? Good for what? Flocks and herds, for grazing, for pasture. There are some places better for that than others. Has to do with the rainfall, has to do with the mineral content of the soil, what it produces in the grass, things such as that. And so, first of all, this is really the best of the land for what they need. Look at this. They're getting the best of the land for what they do for a living. But also, according to verse 34, what also is a factor regarding why they end up in Goshen? Okay, this is very strange to us, but if we think about it, it makes perfect sense. There are certain occupations at certain times in certain places that are looked down upon. For instance, the Middle Ages, if you were a merchant, you were seen as somebody not to be trusted. You were seen as a lowlife. People used them, they didn't trust them. Until the mid-19th century, if you were an actor, you were looked upon as just right above a prostitute. Now look at our culture, how actors are revered. I know everybody's background in this church. But you may have a secret I don't know about, but we probably say something like ditch digger or garbage collector. But, you know, there could be a culture where a bunch of garbage collectors start finding gold in the garbage, and all of a sudden everybody wants to be a garbage collector. You know, you never know how that might turn around. So in this culture, people who took care of flocks and herds were looked down upon. Necessary, like merchants or garbage collectors, but looked down upon. Yeah, Becca?
Were looked down upon because sheep ate so much grass.
Okay.
So the cattlemen hated them
because
they were going to cause problems for their own herds.
Right.
So there are circumstances that create those hostilities, right? And so whatever happened has happened here. And so by separating them, because Goshen is on the fringe of that Egyptian area. So by separating them over in Goshen, that will prevent clashes with the Egyptians. Also, and this is a driving force in the narrative, we've already seen it in Genesis and you keep seeing it, this people of Abraham, in various ways, they need to be separate. Why? Well, they're to be a wholly separate people to God, although that's not really emphasized until the covenant at Sinai in Exodus 20. But, 19 and 20, but they're to be separate so that their bloodline is traceable and consistent. Because of all the promises that are going to be made to different people in this bloodline, we've already seen it, and especially and ultimately the Christ, who will be the seed of Abraham. All this is being orchestrated exactly according to God's plan. Okay, chapter 47. Look what's happening here. Lori, will you read verse 1 to 6, please?
So Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, "My father and my brothers, with their flocks and herds and all that they possess, have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen." And from among his brothers, he took 5 men and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" And they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, as our fathers were." They said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock."
All right, thank you.
This is another, I think, impactful scene as Pharaoh in all his glory, coming in with Joseph, his prime minister, who then serves as a bridge between Pharaoh's administration and Pharaoh himself and the family. And he doesn't haul in all 11 brothers. He picks 5. We don't know which 5. Picks 5. I call it the Jacob 5. Like the Jackson 5, okay? So it's 5. It's representation here. So here's Pharaoh, Joseph, and the Jacob 5. What a scene. Because the difference between Pharaoh and these 5 brothers, culturally, racially, everything, their faith, everything, is a world apart. Joseph is in the middle. Another way that Joseph continually is like a shadow of the Christ. He is the bridge. Always the connector. And these brothers get an audience with Pharaoh. And how does it turn out? Really great. Pharaoh insists they have what? He says, all of Egypt is before you. And says, you take the best of the land. And you take Goshen. I mean, but how else is this going to turn around, right? And not only do they get the best of the land, according to verse 6, what else does Pharaoh talk about?
Take care of my cattle.
I want you to take care of my flocks and herds. But how does he do this? He asks Joseph what? That's right. You pick them. See, the brothers, you talking about eating crow and a buzzard and a turkey and everything else you can stick down their throat. Joseph is, they're completely under his command. And is this going to be an advantageous position for some of the brothers to be the herdsmen of Pharaoh? How? You think they're going to do it for free? They're just going to compensate them. And what quality of the flocks and herds do you think this will be? Of Egypt. The best. And so, you're talking about set up.
Is there a relationship with his brothers comes true that Joseph predicted,
right,
in the dream.
In the dream in chapter 37, they would bow down to him. They continue to have to bow down to him. They continue to be his servants in a way. All this is coming to pass. Exactly. Wow. And let's keep looking at this. Ken, will you read 47, 7 to 12, please?
Then Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the days of the years of your life? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my father in the days of their sojourn. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence, the presence of Pharaoh. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, and Pharaoh, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food according to the number of their dependents.
All right, thank you. And this is the scene that we use to open up our Jacob series, sermon series, and then the scene we end to conclude it. What does Pharaoh display here when Jacob comes in? What's his question? How old are you? Pharaoh is somewhat intrigued by this man, this old shepherd limping into his court, who's clearly got some miles on him. Pharaoh is, listen, you have to ancient rulers, they didn't pay attention to anybody. They didn't make small talk. They didn't say, how's your day going? They didn't say stuff like that. How long have you lived in Asheville? They didn't ask questions like that. I mean, they're here and you're down there, and whatever life you've lived has no relevance to them. But this Pharaoh is interested in Jacob. You know, that's all it takes, folks. It's just a few questions to people to show you're interested in them. It's more important to ask people questions than to give them answers and trying to get to know people. Pharaoh shows this here. He shows an interest in Jacob. But I would have you see this all goes back to his relationship to Joseph. Joseph is incredibly important to Jacob for a lot of reasons. But I would have you see that Jacob is personally interested in Joseph. You know, I've had two people do this in the last 2 weeks, knock on my door trying to sell me something. You don't have that anymore, but, you know, when you open that door, man, they're all smiles. How are you today? See, it's all transactional. I'm hoping to get something from you, so I'm going to be really friendly. I want you to see that there is an interest that Pharaoh has in this family. And I think it's legit. Because when you compare that to Exodus 1, when there arose a Pharaoh that knew not Joseph, the whole fate of the Israelites changed. They're in high cotton. They're in high grain. They're in high grass in Egypt with this Pharaoh. Now, let's talk about this. Who blesses whom here in this interaction with Jacob and Pharaoh? Jacob blesses Pharaoh. How do you think that usually worked in ancient times with rulers? Usually the opposite. The ruler does the blessing. He gives the gifts. He gives the support, all that kind of thing. Do you think this is merely some kind of empty ritual? Jacob comes in and bless you, Pharaoh. I don't think it is. These are not words. Jacob is literally blessing Pharaoh. Well, what's the big deal with that? What does Jacob have to offer? Who's on Jacob's side? Who's on Jacob's side that can give blessings? These patriarchs become God's representative on earth. When their faith matures, they become God's man on earth. And that's what Jacob becomes here. And it says in verse 12 that he provided, Joseph provided for his family, all their descendants as they needed. Look at Joseph's position in the family. Look how important that position is. And look how much grace he continues to show them. All right, but look what happens next here. Ray, will you read chapter 47, verse 13 to 21 to begin with? 13 to 21, please.
Now there was no food in the land, in all the land, because the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. Joseph gathered all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they brought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. When the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us food, for why should we die in your presence? For our money is gone." Then Joseph said, "Give up your livestock, and I will give you food for your livestock, since your money is gone." So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses and the flocks and the herds and the donkeys. And he fed them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. When that year was ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, "We will not hide from my lord that our money is all spent, and the cattle are my lord's. There's nothing left for my lord except our bodies and our lands. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we and our land will be slaves to Pharaoh. So give us seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not be desolate." Did you say 21?
21, please.
So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For every Egyptian sold his field, because the famine was severe upon the land. Thus the land became Pharaoh's. As for the people, he removed them to the cities from one end of Egypt's border to the other.
All right, thank you very much. What's gradually happening here in Egypt? Concentration of wealth, resources, and thus power in the hands of whom? Pharaoh. People pay for the grain and they run out of money. This is a currency economy, by the way, gold and silver. And then they need grain, so they sell what? Their livestock. And then they still don't have enough grain. And because Joseph's plan has resulted in great storehouses of grain under the administration to dispense, they do what, the people? Matter of fact, they come to Joseph with this offer. What? All they've got left, they have no money, no livestock. They've got land. And you see what this results in. If they surrender their land to Pharaoh, in essence, they become his what? His servants. So they lose their cash, they lose their currency, they lose their livestock, they lose their land. Now they're obligated to work for Pharaoh. We'll see later on what that's going to result in. It's going to result in something that we would know back in the American South as sharecropping. Somebody else owns the land, you grow the crop, you give them a share of the crop, and you get a share of the crop. So it's more than sharecropping. It becomes a serf-like arrangement, like you see in the Middle Ages, where you're bound to the land, you work the land for someone else. What's happening to Pharaoh's dynasty? It's becoming incredibly powerful, isn't it? And why? In Genesis 12, verse 3, God made a promise to Abraham and to his descendants. I will bless those who what? Bless you. Has Pharaoh been a blessing to Abraham's descendants? Absolutely, he's been a blessing. Look what's happening. And look at this. While the children of Israel are prospering, what's happening to the people of Egypt? They're losing. They're becoming almost impoverished. So this is a fascinating thing. This is a really important section, and we shouldn't underestimate how important it is. So we'll come back to it next week, finish this part, and then finish the rest, overview the rest of the book. Thank you very much.